Do you make anything of Bo's call-up coinciding with this recent run? I've seen some people who don't like Marcus Stroman so much suggest that getting him out of the room has helped to contribute to this. I don't buy that necessarily. I just think this team has some good young players, and it's beating teams it should, and competing with teams like Texas that it should be in games with.
Yeah, I think part of it is Kansas City, Texas, things like that. I think part of it is Bo's been great. Like, they didn't get good just because they called Bo up. They're doing well because Bo got called up, and he's doing great. You know, 15 extra base hits in 16 games. And Grichik's been hot, and Teoscar Hernandez has been hot, and McKinney comes back and hits a home run, and Reese McGuire has a big game. And I agree with you. I think most of it is they've got really good young players. And I do think, you know, that the front office is happy to kind of hand the keys to the car over to the kids and say, hey, it's your clubhouse. And, you know, how many times have we heard about the leadership qualities of Borucki and Jansen and Biggio and some of the others? And there's no question that it feels different. But I would leave Marcus total and Aaron Sanchez totally out of this. You know, was it time for a change? Maybe it was, but I don't think that's why they've gone 11-5. They've gone 11-5 because they're playing really well, and they're getting performances from a lot of good young players right now who are getting more experience at the big league level.
Dan, I'm two minds, so naturally I want you to set me straight. And part of me thinks none of these wins or losses really matter. It's about the incremental gains, and when we look back at this team in a couple of years, we're not going to care what their record is, and we don't care that Houston lost a bunch of games and only won 50 games for a couple of years before they won big. But then part of me thinks in terms of culture, and you want winning habits, and you want to raise winning players with the habit of winning and not getting used to losing. Does the actual wins and losses throughout the rest of the season, does it matter in terms of where this team is hoping to go?
You know, I think both parts of you are right. I mean, on the one hand, and I've always said this, Donovan, that this year I didn't really care how many games they won or lost. It's about finding out who's a part of the plan going forward. But now that we've seen so much turnover and a lot of the guys are here, I do think it matters a little bit more the rest of the way. But to go back to your first point, I'll give you an example. The 1-0 loss to the Yankees, the Aroldis Chapman, Vladimir Guerrero day, that was a loss. That's about as good a loss as you can have. That was a loss where I'm sure the Yankees walked off the field saying, "Woo, these guys are going to be a problem in a couple of years." And I'm sure the Blue Jays walked off the field feeling pretty good about themselves because they, you know, battled the Yankees toe-to-toe for four games, won two of them, could have easily won that game, and the three kids had great at-bats against Aroldis Chapman. So, like, that's one where you say it's a loss, but it doesn't hurt them. But on the culture side, I'm a total sap for culture and teamwork and togetherness and all that, and that, you know, maybe that's ridiculous, but I'm like that, and I do think that high-fiving as they come off the field is worth something between now and the end of the season. And you know, if you have good losses, which are moral victories, okay. If you're getting your brains beat out all the time, that's not helping anybody. So, but yeah, you know, that'll happen once in a while. But I do think, you know, if they can play 500 the rest of the way and wind up with 70 wins, whatever the number is, it's more about them just feeling good about the progress they're making and knowing that brighter days are ahead.
That and also feeling good about the progress of some individual players. We see Rowdy Tellez get brought back into the fold. He doesn't play last night, but looking to get some more reps in the major leagues. Earlier we were talking about this feels like a bit of an extended tryout for him, but what do you think his, I guess, future is with the Blue Jays, especially considering that the larger theory is that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. will eventually gravitate towards first base, if not next year, in 2 years, and that's where you would want Rowdy as well.
Yeah, I think we've got actually a few different things still to find out, and I think the next 6 weeks, just like for Reed Foley and Pannone and Thornton and Waggis Pack, it's basically an audition. That's the word that Charlie Montoyo used a few days ago. It's an audition for a spot in the rotation next year. And I think for Rowdy Tellez, too, who's had some really good moments and some not good moments, I think it's a bit of an audition for him for next year. I personally don't think they're going to move Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to first base next year. I don't know how you guys feel. I think he's been better the last week or 10 days or so. And I don't think it's a coincidence since Bo came up that Vlad's been better defensively. You know, maybe putting in a little bit more work before the game with Louis Rivera, a little bit more attention to detail and all that. But for Rowdy, I think the next 6 weeks are an audition. Like, force their hand. Force them to give you the everyday first base job for next year. And if he does what he did at Buffalo, obviously he's going to get it. But, you know, Gurriel came back from Buffalo better. Teoscar Hernandez came back from Buffalo better. And we'll see if Rowdy does. But I think the Blue Jays need to be shown. I think they're going to give him every chance. He's going to play more than Smoke the rest of the way. Charlie said that yesterday. And I think it's up to him to try to force them into giving him the first base job next year.
Just very quickly on the Smoke thing, and then I want to ask about Tellez a step further. Do you think there's a chance Smoke goes on waivers, and if so, he gets claimed kind of in a Galvis-like fashion?
Yes, absolutely, yeah. And I'm sure, like Galvis, and maybe even more so out of respect for the number of years he's been here, I'm sure Smoke is fully in on the loop on that, if anything is going on. I don't know if he's gone on waivers yet. And the difference is now, if you go on waivers and you get claimed, it's irrevocable. Like, you can just let the guy go. It's different than it used to be. And like, as soon as Luke Voit, whatever it was, 10 days ago, pulled that, you know, strained his oblique or whatever, I thought, Yankees. Like,
yeah, and Encarnacion.
Yeah. Why wouldn't the Yankees take him? They see him 19 times a year. They know he's a good guy. They know he's a good fielder. He's a switch hitter. Like, you don't need to, you know, hit him third and play him every day for him to be a good citizen. He'll do whatever you ask him to do for the next 6 weeks. So it wouldn't surprise me, yes, if he goes on waivers and if he gets claimed. Now, he's making a little bit more money. He's an $8 million guy, so I guess it's $2 million roughly the rest of the season to pick up Justin Smoke. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if somebody claims him.
With Dan Schulman, on Tellez, this is a tough time, Dan, in baseball's history to be limited positionally.
Yeah.
So I think of Rowdy, and is he a particularly good defensive first baseman? Meh. He's not a speed guy. Like, if he's not hitting home runs, can't they find somebody else to play that position? It's a position that allows, I think, for some flexibility, and you can get different bats onto first base and, you know, kind of cover your tracks that way. It stands out to me that he's going to have to show them something that would be different than what a Lourdes or a Teoscar may have to show. Like, if he's not hitting home runs, if he's not barreling, what is he really?
Right. Well, I think he'll hit home runs. It's just whether he hits home runs with a, you know, 230 batting average and a 278 on-base percentage, or can he hit 260, 270 and have a 320 or 330 on-base percentage? So I think if Rowdy got 550 to 600 at-bats, he hits 30 to 35 homers. I really do. But can he do that with a 270 average? So I think for him, it's about chasing less out of the strike zone. And you know what? It's the same for Gurriel, and it's the same for Teoscar Hernandez. Make them throw strikes. And Grichuk as well. Make them throw strikes. And look at the damage these guys are doing when they're forcing pitchers into the strike zone. And if Rowdy Tellez can lay off the, you know, the bad pitches a little bit more, he is a you've been around him, Scotty. He's a big man. He's a big, strong guy. And you know, also continue to work on defense and, you know, just tightening up everything around his game. You know, showing up early, taking ground balls, all that kind of stuff, like other guys are doing. I think that he's got a bright future ahead of him, and I think he's going to get every chance to prove it. And I'm not sure these 6 weeks will make or break it. I think it can really help. But again, I think the Guerrero to first base thing is not quite imminent. I look at 2020 as still a bit of a let's see what they have kind of year. And by 21, they're saying, okay, now we know what we are. Now let's go add big time, and now let's see if we can win a division or whatever the case may be. But I still think you'll see some moving around and up and down and experimenting next season.
Dan, before we let you go, love to get your perspective, given all the great work you do covering NCAA basketball on the Rich Paul rule. And the NCAA, for those who don't know, recently instituted a rule where their basketball athletes could have conversations with athletes in determining their draft stock and come back to school. But one of the qualifications for said agent is they had to have a bachelor's degree, which many people criticized them for and thought it they were targeting Rich Paul specifically. They've since revoked that. Dan, is this just a PR mishap, or is the NCAA, even with the Rice Commission supposed to be helping them get through these waters, really been unable to navigate where they're being perceived as the culture around the sport and sports in general is changing?
Yeah, I think they just made a big mistake. I personally don't think they were targeting Rich Paul, because if they were, they had to know this was going to blow up in their face. I think they just made a mistake. I think they said, hey, we're a collegiate organization. We should value education. Wouldn't it be great if we attached a degree to it and then we show that we're interested in the education of student-athletes, not just the athleticism? And I just think they made a big mistake. I mean, you can't discriminate against a guy because he doesn't have a college degree, in my opinion, in this line of work. And you know, Donovan, like when anything needs to be discussed, you know, getting the NCAA to change something can take months and months and maybe years and years. And they changed this one in hours. So this blew up on them pretty good. I just think it was a huge PR mistake. They realized they made a mistake. They changed it very quickly. But it's going to leave a mark. But, you know, the NCAA's got a lot of marks to deal with right now.